When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I will be here, Ben, but you should know that this week I feel like is a turning point in the season of life is about, like, I mean, it's about to be a literal season change, but this for sure is a life season change happening to me this week.
Yes, you're about to embark on a whole new arena of parenthood.
Yes,
which is very exciting. Would you like to share what that happens to be?
I will. Yes.
Or should we just leave it at that and change topics entirely?
So, transition.
Jay's about to go through a huge change. Anyway,
we don't need to talk. Yeah.
Wednesday of this week, you will embark on, I believe, what will be how many years of your life will it be? Probably another 15 years?
Oh, yeah, 13, 15 years, I think. That sounds about right. I mean, just through regular school and whatnot. But what's happening is that Luke, my oldest son, is starting kindergarten.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I mean, it feels like he was just born. And it's just like one of those things. Like, sometimes I think about, like, just the act of having kids. And I'm like, I don't know. I just cannot remember what it was like before I had them. What was I doing with all of my time, or what did I care about? I don't know. It's like, they have just become like such a part of my life that I feel like if I went in a time machine and just like went back to a previous part of my life, I'd be like, you're so lonely. You don't even know.
Oh, you know? Yeah, I know. It's so true. It's so true. And I think that there's a real, it's interesting how when your time becomes the scarce resource of your life, and all of a sudden, like, cause you know, we'll get back to this later on in the episode, I'm sure. But like, I tinkered with the boat a fair bit over the weekend, but like the associated opportunity cost of being able to apply this time and like what it meant in the way that I was using like Addie's naps and stuff like that to like steal these moments where I could go and like successfully tinker.
Yeah.
It is like dawning on me in such a massive way. I was telling Alice this last night while we were just like sitting on the couch at the end of the day, but like, I was like, I don't know. Like when you imagine that very stereotypical kind of like perfect American life, so to speak, of like the grass yard and the well tended to home decorations that are perfectly associated with every season, and you know, like your car being washed or clean and being up on the latest everything, and you know, like whatever. I mean, just like whatever the case may be, like whatever you imagine to be like the version of like, this is what life looks like when it's just like clicking,
right?
You know, it was like, but my use of time to tinker with the boat over the weekend, you know, it was like, not only was it my entire use of recreation time, it borrowed a little bit of time away from Addie. It meant Alice needed to, like, you know, make necessary accommodations to be watching Addie while I wasn't watching Addie, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like there's like all these little moments, but at the same rate, like it made those moments of tinkering like so also like joyous as well, because it was like, I don't normally take this kind of like, you know, time
yeah.
to just go and like focus on something something elsewhere, something external.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, you know, like this is really cool. Like I'm enjoying the sacred like hour and 40 minutes that I have while Addie takes a nap to attempt to do this. In the meantime, it means I didn't mow the lawn.
Right.
You
know,
like, so my grass is overgrown, but I got to do something. So anyway, but you are correct. Yes. Like what time was like prior to this was
like even you talking about that. It's like, I remember back once upon a time where like, yeah, before we had kids, where even if I just had to like mow the lawn on a Saturday, like that felt like, boy, I felt pretty guilty about this because this is a lot of time that I'm not going to be able to spend like with Beth or like with my wife or something. Like, you know,
Beth or your wife.
Yeah, I know. So.
Different
people.
I don't ever talk about Beth. I'm married to someone else.
Yeah, they suck. No.
Beth's the front man.
Beth is great. Yeah. No, I remember feeling like guilty about having to do that. Like I was spending time away from Beth to go mow the lawn, which is something I had to do.
Sure. You know? Yeah. Right. Right. Yes. Yes.
You know, and I'm like, I can't even imagine. Like, you know, I don't. You know, we have someone else come like mow the lawn these days, but I'm like, I can't imagine feeling guilty about that. That kind of, I have to go do something by myself time without the kids being there.
Oh yeah. Right.
You
right,
know,
yep.
Like, why was that? Like, oh man, you know, and I don't, to be fair, I don't think Beth actually cared. This is just me self-imposing, you know, low self-esteem.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. 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 No, I understand completely.
Don't feel good about anything.
Right. Right.
That's, anyway, but yeah, so Luke's starting kindergarten, this week. And it's just like, it is such a weird experience. It's like this, I mean, it's extremely like bittersweet because on the one hand, it's like, you're so proud he's going and it's going to be, you know, hopefully he's going to have fun. He's going to start learning things and he's going to start like having his, but he's going to start having like his own little life every day, you know, where he's like very independent for long sections of the day. And he's going to have lots of little friends going. And, you know, like you're that time where all day, every day could be spent at home, like with you, is just like, that part is like definitely like over,
yeah.
You know, like now that time will be weekends and summer. Whereas it used to just be every day. And it's like, I mean, he went to preschool and stuff, but like that is his official journey. And it's like also kind of knowing that like, it's going to continue to be your journey until like you're 18, at least, at which point it might, you know, you could choose to continue it on, past that. And it's like that, you know, it's like I don't know. It's just, it's such a, he's thinking like such a first step. But then I also think about like my first day of kindergarten. Like I still remember it.
Same.
You know,
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like, it's like a big moment. And I think like, it's a little bit nerve wracking because like, I think to myself, how did my first day go? Like I didn't know any of the other kids in my class going in. And I remember going in and being like, there's a bunch of kids already there and stuff. And I didn't really know what to do, but I went to the shelf, I got these little blocks out, and I just sort of poured them out and started playing with them. And within like the first 15 minutes of being there, two other boys had come over to me, and their names were Zach and Austin. And because of that 15 minutes, those two people were my best friends for the next 13 years, you
right,
know,
right,
like,
yeah.
And I'm like, it occurs to me that like, when I drop him off to school on Wednesday, like the next 15 minutes could be like the most important 15 minutes that have happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, like from not, and I, like literally from like you leaving the car, like 15 minutes from now, your life could be changed forever. You
yeah.
know, it's like, it's crazy to think about that. And it's like, I don't, I don't know like how to wrap that up in my mind or deal with it. And I think he's, you know, nervous about going, and so, I don't know. So that's sort of what's been flying through my head.
No, very understandably too, because I mean, yeah, like you're right. Like you, like when you think about like growing up, you know, and like our experiences and our memories from childhood or even like before we like left high or up until graduating high school or whatever, so much of our memories and all these moments happened with the people that we would have met during these school years and the people who go on to become like your best friends, the people you go and do sleepovers with or go to camp with or, you know, like embark in other activities and stuff like that. So like they end up like being so, so important in so many different ways, but like also so much of your relationship with the rest of your family like happens in your post-school life. Like I have a small handful of memories pre-kindergarten, Like I remember like riding a bike for the first time, or like I remember like my first day of preschool, or like there was a period of time where you would have been going to elementary school and I wasn't. And like, I remember like a day in the car asking mom, like, when do I get to go to school? So like, you know, I have like a small handful of memories,
yeah,
but like their 100% of their life up until this moment has been spent during those years. And almost all of their memories of what childhood and growing up is like is about to start.
Right.
You know, it's like, realistically, everything you've experienced so far is all part of this like sort of like incubation zone that is like preparing them to then go and do the rest of everything else.
Yeah.
And that's like really, really, really wild. But the cool thing is that, I mean, like, you know, we're watching the you did post the Disney vlog.
I did post it. I will apologize. I think I said in the pop last week that I was going to post it on Saturday. I didn't because I forgot, but basically I forgot because last week on Wednesday I got home and it's like I got hit by a fever as if it was like an oncoming bus.
Right.
Like I was fine 1 minute and then like literally shivering so hard my teeth were chattering like 1 minute later. And I was like, what is happening? And that was like a whole day and a half fiasco. And when I came back, I completely forgot I was going to post it. So sorry I didn't post it on Saturday, but it is live now if you want to go check it out. But go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, though, so it was like speaking to those memories, it was really interesting to me because I was thinking about this exact thing that's happening in your life right now. And watching that vlog, you at the very end of it, you have this like this piece of commentary about like everybody going back to the hotel or whatever. And like you and Luke being like, all right, me and you, Tom, what do you want to do? And like you guys go and like meet Ariel and like have a couple like little like memories and moments together and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in the video, you're talking about like, I wonder if this will be like a thing he can come back to. Like there was that time as a kid, and I even bet he can't remember how or why it would have like just been you two.
Yeah,
you know, versus
is he gonna remember back and be like, I don't know why it was just me and dad.
Right. Yeah, it's like there's no way we were the only ones who traveled to Disney. But it's like I can see those memories standing out, and like speaking to the memories that happened like pre-kindergarten, it's like it's so cool that like literally just today it was sort of like witnessing like a piece of what could be like one of those moments.
Yeah.
Heading into the rest of like, you know, this next stage of his life and your life, as a parent. The other thing I've got to say that is like so tremendously daunting to me, like sort of vicariously like living. Cause Addie is still pretty far away from this
right,
being like a stage of her life. Like we're still years out.
Or so it would seem.
Yeah. Sure, blink of an eye.
It's gonna be like boom.
Just like that. Now she's going to school. Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
But the thing I have so much anxiety about that I think I've had anxiety about since I was in high school myself. One of the big projects that I always needed like parents to come in on or to like aid with was specifically science fair. You know, it was like science fair I felt like was a wrecking ball that struck the whole family when it came time to do it, because like each year that we went after it, it was this like big endeavor that like required like a lot of like assembling of like parts and ideas and a show board and construction paper and like a paper slicer cutter thing. And like, you know, there was like all these like different, like, you know, bits and bobs and whatever. And I'm like, gosh, like for mom and dad. And this is what I'm thinking about myself, like talking about trying to carve time to work on my boat. I'm like, what massive, like I know that mom and dad, like it was not their favorite thing. Like when science fair came around, because they knew that it was going to like somehow impact them as well by way of like, you know, helping me complete the project.
Yeah.
But it's I'm like I can't even begin to imagine what it would be like to find like, you know, 20 hours to aid like this other project outside of my standard everyday going to work realm of responsibilities.
Right?
Like I don't know what it would be like to imagine in, like today. And I'm sure, you know, you so gradually like reach this point that you're probably more prepared for it when it comes to pass. But like, I don't know what I would do if today when I was leaving work, it was like, well, Addie's got science fair due on Friday. So we're working on, you know, show board stuff and we're going to be, you know, like,
I'm sure those days are coming.
I know. Yeah. Like, and that's the other thing too. So like mom and dad, I feel like had it so well split, and I have no idea if this was a conversation they had or something they planned, or if it just just like how it worked out. But I always felt like dad was strong in the subjects of history and English. So like if you were writing like a paper for English, he could like proofread it and like go through and like mark it up and,
yeah,
you know, had like all like those bits and stuff. And then mom, I always felt like, you know, being like a CPA, she was like math and science. So I don't know if like they decided at some point in time that they were going to sort of like divide and conquer the subjects, uh-huh, and be like, okay, this will be yours, these will be mine. Like if they have a question about an English assignment, like dad handles that one. If they have a question about, you know, a math question, algebra, yeah, then mom will handle that one. Or right. Whatever. But I even remember that, and I'm sure you can attest to it as well. Like mom coming up to help me like with math homework and staring at like an algebra equation or something like that, and like just not understanding why X equals 2, because X is a letter and 2 is a number, and I don't understand, what do you mean? Like,
yeah,
like I remember the moments where my brain hadn't grasped how math worked yet,
right?
And the frustration that would like pour out of me because I'm like, how do you know X equals 2?
Right. Like, it's like, well, that's what we're trying to figure out.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, like the idea that at some point in time, you know, like kids will need help with homework and I will need to attempt to relearn how to do said homework is like, I'm like, the thing I always tell myself is that like the moment they get their textbooks, like when they go to bed at night, I'm going to like sit down at the dining room table and like do the homework.
Yeah.
You know, for like the first 9 weeks of school and like go through the whole book and be like, okay.
You're just going to bring in the whole textbook.
I'm just going to like relearn all of this stuff. And it goes, do you remember the show when we were growing up? It was called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yes.
Okay. So at the time, I feel like that show might've come out like around the time that I myself was like a fifth grader or maybe like in middle school or something like that. Not far out of it. But like, I remember thinking, how on earth is this a concept for a show? Like why would the fifth grader ever be smarter than like a grown adult? And I'm like, because they're in the heart of learning all these things. Yeah,
because the
like,
things they're required to know are things that grown adults are not actually required to know. They're just sort of expected to have a general familiarity with. Like, you don't need to know all the dates of the Revolutionary War. You just basically need to know that America beat the British at some point and won their independence.
Yes, you
know,
exactly. Right?
Like,
right.
That's you'll get by with that.
Yeah.
You don't need to know the exact dates and all of the people who signed and who, you know, like...
Who did what, when, and where.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, at some point in time, I feel like they're going to come home from school, and I'm going to be like, they are smarter than I am. Or not, smarter is probably even like the wrong word, and I feel like that gets tossed around a lot. They are more acquainted with this these pieces of information than I am, but they're going to look to me as if I will know more than them. And I'm like, at this point in time, I don't think I will know more than you.
Right. Well, it's like, are you smarter than a fifth grader is a very catchy like title. And it's a very fun show to watch because it's kids versus adults. But like a better title is, are you better at fifth grade curriculum than a fifth grader?
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And like, it's like probably, are you better at the fifth grade SOLs? You know?
Right. The state of Virginia.
Is the big state level test you have to take every year, which I think Virginia might be the only state that uses the SOLs. But
yeah, the standards of learning.
Standards of learning. Yeah.
People are like, SOL means something else to me.
And you know what? That's how it felt taking them.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. It's like, oh boy, here we go again.
Here we go. And you know what? What was so dumb about the SOLs in Virginia is that it would take, you'd have like a week every semester where you'd have to just like, everyone's taking SOLs this week. And then the SOLs would not count as your exams in that class as well.
Not at all.
No. So state would provide the school with exams themselves for your, for how the school was doing at teaching its students those subjects. But how you performed on that test only mattered as to how the school itself was performing. How it didn't affect your grade in that class at all. You had to come back the next week and take the actual exams to get grades on. That was just miserable.
It was miserable because, it usually meant that like as the school year progressed, I think you took the SOLs in like April.
Yeah.
And then you'd have examinations like the last week of May. And it's just like, what is this? Yeah. What is this? Like, oh, it's like, man. You know, yeah. And it even seemed like the other problem with these particular standardized tests for the school system, at least where we went to school, is that like, it seemed like the teachers themselves didn't really like unanimously, like we're all just as frustrated with the SOLs as anybody else.
So yes.
They were like, we're required to teach you this because it's going to be on the SOLs. I don't want to teach you this.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay.
All right.
I'm just here as a student.
Right.
You know, like, I feel like I'm getting between.
Yeah.
Between,
like, don't, yeah. I'm not the middleman here.
Right.
But, okay. Let me ask you, speaking of standardized tests.
Okay.
So I'm sure you're familiar with the SATs.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Did you ever take the ACTs?
I took the ACTs, but I remember that this was like one of those things that at least when I was applying to colleges and the kinds of colleges I was attempting to go to, none of them, I think, explicitly required an ACT score.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this stage in my learning, it was like, I think mom signed me up for them. It was a Saturday morning, you know, like where you would get up at like 6.
Yeah.
And you'd be at the school by like 7:30. Mm-hmm. And there was like a very strict regime. You had to have a specific kind of pencil, and you had to have batteries in your
calculator and all that,
like,
jazz.
Did you bring like a bag of snacks because your blood sugar is going to drop? Like, there was like a whole methodology to like how you go about taking these things to like make sure you do well. And I can specifically remember the ACTs because I think I'd been going through a breakup.
Oh,
like the Friday night prior. And so I was up until, I'm pretty sure, like 2:30 in the morning on AOL Instant Messenger, you know, like going back and forth, like with like whatever was happening. And I think that I did not, like, mom probably told me that I was like, hey, don't forget ACTs this weekend. You know, it was like, I was going through a breakup and just not thinking about it. And so I remember mom waking me up like 2.5 hours later or 3.5 hours later. And I was like, that's like one of those things where my math was just bad as I was telling this story. And it's like the ACTs assess some measure of that. It's like, well, I bet you're about to say this is why you didn't do well. Seems like that's why you didn't do well, because you don't know math. No, but that wasn't it. But so I remember like waking up and she was like, hey, ACTs. And I was like, this is going to be bad. Mm-hmm. And I legitimately fell asleep while taking the ACTs.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I can't remember if this is just SATs or ACTs as well. And there's like some weird things where you like don't lose points for questions you don't answer or something like
okay,
that.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you remember that being like,
I do remember there were like, I don't remember how it applied to any particular test, but I do remember there being like strategies about like, if you don't know it, don't answer it, because it'll count against you if you get it wrong.
Yeah. And I was always like, well, why, like, how does this, like, I don't understand what that is. Like, I feel like that was like a strategy that somebody told me. It was like we've talked before in chess about like en passant,
yeah,
as if it's like this is something that you're regularly going to be engaging with, and it's like it's a pretty specialty specific maneuver that's not going to come up all that often,
but
like, you know, it's worth telling you about this one kind of like off the, like, this one move you could make,
right? Like, it does exist in the rules, so you need to know about it in case it comes up, but it probably won't but
in my mind it was almost like every single game it was almost like hinging on whether or not you could successfully pull off an en passant.
Exactly.
And I feel like that is exactly how I was. Like, every single question on the SATs is like, I would go through the question and it would sort of be like, I should probably not, you know what, I should probably just leave this one blank, because I feel like that's strategically like doing this. And it's like, I don't think I understood the strategy at all. Anyway, so I sort of had like a middling score on the ACTs. I don't even remember what it was. But either way, I took them. I think I did like only a score that was like, it's like, maybe don't even report that on your college applications, because it doesn't seem like it's going to help.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe that is what it really came down to, is it was like if you had like a medium SAT, but like a high ACT, it might be worth like submitting both. But like, they don't require the ACT submission, so it's like, you may as well take it in case you do well. And if you don't do well, like, you don't have to tell them.
Right.
And so I think that was the position I was in. It was right. like when all was said and done, it was like, maybe just don't report it.
Right. Yeah. I want to say that was my, I feel like, yeah, I don't even know if that was like, if they're allowed to just like pull this information, whether or not you report it, I feel like it hurt me. But I remember, yeah, it was when I took the ACTs, it was the Friday night beforehand, and that's when mom told me, hey, I signed you up for the ACTs. And I remember in that moment, one, learning that I was taking them, and two, learning that they were a kind of test that existed.
Yeah,
you know?
Mom is 100% going to call both of us after listening to this episode of The Pop and be like, you guys knew, I talked to you about it.
Absolutely not. I was like, I'm sorry, the what? Well, I remember it like thinking like, I had, like, you hear about the SATs nonstop growing up. And it's like, I had never heard of the ACTs at all. Did not know they were a thing. If you'd have been like, are you taking the ACTs this weekend? I'd have been like, what, acting class? You know, never just weren't had not heard of it at all until less than 8 hours before I was taking it.
Right.
It was like such a gap in knowledge that like, as I'm showing up, I'm like looking around and I'm like, see other people I know there. And I'm like, you get like, this is it. I kept waiting for someone to be like, no, just kidding. This isn't even real. Like, you know, like, what a joke. Like, certainly there's no way this exists in a way that is so serious that I've never heard of it before.
Right.
And I remember just being like, not only had I never heard of it, but now I was required to take it and it was going to take up basically all of your Saturday.
Yes.
What? And it's not like it's just a different version of SATs. It's like different subjects altogether, which I hadn't taken in like years. You know, it's like I know I did just god awful on them. And that was my experience with the ACTs. So
nice.
So sorry, Mom.
I know. It's so funny though too, because it's like there's all these things that I felt like they emphasized a lot as we were going through school, and I can't say that they're not important. I just don't really know. But like there's sort of like your standard metrics for your college applications, which I felt like were your like your GPA and your SAT score, and then like, you know, other things that could ultimately be factors were like if you were all state at a sport and there was a reason that like they might be recruiting you for like scholarship purposes, it's like that could be like another entryway that could be making like a big difference. But like I felt like they made a big deal about like your extracurriculars and like what clubs were you a part of and like how did you interact with those things and like, you know, did you do sports like from start to finish and like, you know, like it seemed like there were all these like intangibles, and it almost seemed more like Those were like the tiniest grams that might tip the scales in your favor when all was said and done. But it was like your GPA and SAT score, and if like the score required like an essay or something like that, it's like those were probably taking you 97% of the way there.
Oh yeah.
Then if you were like captain of the, you know, swim team or something like that, it was sort of like, okay, we'll give you like a half point for that. You know,
right,
like,
yeah.
Like this is someone with some like leadership abilities.
I know.
Maybe.
I feel like what they need to tell you is that like the important thing, first of all, is to have a 4.0 GPA, right? Then you're just going to be competing with everyone else to begin with. And all those other things will matter. But those things don't really matter if your grade point average isn't at least X.
Well, okay, so here was another one that drove me nuts about this entire process was like you're going through school. And the other thing that ends up like you're trying to weigh out whether or not it's important. So one thing is that our school district has 7-point grading scale. So a 93 was a B. Whereas like a lot of school districts, like you would like 90 through 100 is an A, and then 80 through 89, you know, was a B.
Yeah. 10-point grading scale,
10-point grading scale and so forth. So there's that. And then the other one is sort of like, you know, you're going through and you're doing your course selections as you're going through high school. And again, like if anybody who is listening right now is like an admissions official or something, like let me know, because I'd just be curious at this point. I would love to be a fly on the wall to see what they look at and how important it is, because I feel like all throughout school I took advanced classes, but then it was like one of those things where it was like, well, if I were to have like backed up a few steps, it's like if instead of taking like this advanced class where I got a B, if I had just taken like the they call it college prep or college bound. If I'd taken the college bound version of this class and aced it, then would that A be worth more than my B in the advanced class? Because the other thing too about the advanced class is that like it was advanced, but it wasn't AP. And like AP was like where you were like gaining college credits as a high school student.
Right.
So it's like you could see where an AP course might be beneficial. But these were not AP. This was just advanced. And it was just like, which even now is like one of those things where it's like, it feels like they shouldn't even be able to call it advanced anymore. That feels like
right.
hierarchical.
Oh, yeah. You know. Yes.
Anyway, something like that. But so that was oftentimes where I was like, I can't even tell like throughout my high school career. It's like, was I just like...
Like, did you just make it harder for yourself for no reason?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so I spoke about science fair earlier. It's like the way that our school system worked was that if you did, like again, air quotes, I'm putting big air quotes, like I'm not trying to use the term advanced. It's just, that is what they were called at the time. So, but like if you took advanced science or whatever, then you had to do science fair. But like, that was like one of the big differences between not taking advanced science was that you didn't end up doing science fair.
Right.
Like that was not like a requirement as part of like the otherwise, you know, major curriculum. And my relationship with science fair, I always felt like was ridiculous because I would always do extremely well on the like application. Like I really liked doing the tests and mm-hmm. like putting together the presentation, and I could go and like, you know, like deliver it to the class and explain what happened. And like, I won like ribbons and stuff at like the science fair, like with the judges and all that. But like my research paper, I was miserable at. So I remember in seventh grade, I was submitting, I made the mailbox 2000.
Oh yeah. I remember. Yeah.
It was a mailbox that had a drawer. So like when you opened the mailbox, like a drawer sort of like slid out so that like, if you were getting your mail while still in your car, you had the ability to like gain an extra like 6 inches of reach.
You didn't have to reach as far.
Right. Which is otherwise, I think, illegal because I think you're not supposed to tamper with your mailbox in right. any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
So not something that you like could actually like apply in real life. But either way.
But you built it and it worked.
But I built it and it worked. And it was like a real like functioning like invention, I guess, if you will, which was pretty neat. And I came in second place overall, like for the whole science fair, which was really cool. But on my research paper on Simple Machines, I got a 42.
A 42?
A 42. And I remember like my teacher handed me back my paper and she was just like, we need to talk. And I was like, you know, it was like one of these things where especially at the time, it was like, I didn't understand what I was supposed to say. Like when I had written other research papers, it was sort of like in sixth grade, for example, my science fair project was I built bridges out of popsicle sticks and glue. And I used structural supports that were triangles versus squares.
Right.
And I think from an engineering perspective, typically triangles end up being the stronger of the two
right.
like things. So like that's like a regarded thing. And I was going to basically be putting that to the test to see whether or not it actually applied in my practical application. So like I could go through and write a research paper on the basis of why triangles were supposed to be stronger than squares. But when it came to my seventh grade research paper on simple machines, it's like there are just definitions of simple machines. And
right.
I couldn't plagiarize the definition of a simple machine. So I was attempting to put the definition of a simple machine into my own words without using like I descriptors to be like, I interacted with an inclined plane today.
That's very confusing, especially because like the definition of a simple machine, like that wouldn't even be like plagiarizing. That's just like general knowledge.
Right. Yeah. It's like,
you know, no one owns that information.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 So it just ended up being one of these things where I was so confused, and she sat down with me, and I know that my teacher probably explained it to me in a way that made sense, but I went through the whole process and she was like, I'm like, you did so poorly on this. I can tell you tried. We're going to like, I normally don't allow this. We're going to let you take a second swing at it.
Wow.
And so she let me go through and take a second swing at it. And I'm pretty sure on my second swing, I got a 71.
Man.
So it was just like, I was like,
yeah, there's like such bummer things. Like I remember like, you know, sometimes I remember like my junior year, our English teacher had this, what was like this, where you could like, if you were like writing a paper about something, you know, whether or not you like made all of your points appropriately and got your messaging across, you could still end up with like an 81 because like you had misplaced commas and stuff.
Right. Like grammatical errors.
Yeah. Like grammatical errors. And it was like, I can see you having like a cap of like 5 points for bad grammatical errors. Like that's not part of it, but clearly I did the rest of the assignment and research, and I'm sorry that on my 5-page paper, there was like some bad punctuation, right. But like that shouldn't mean that I get like a C on this paper.
Which, yeah, again, yeah. You know, on this grading scale, an 81 is a C.
Yeah,
kind of a low C.
Yeah, at that. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's like, oh my gosh, come on. Yeah, and I remember I had that exact same teacher, and she was extremely persnickety. She would do this exact same thing, like, you know, she'd be giving you like a written evaluation on like your, like, can you remember details from like a book we read or whatever. It's like, and if you had grammatical errors in your written responses, then she took points off for like not having proper grammar there. And it's like,
you're really missing the point.
The point is, and I would say the point now is that like what we do for a living with Super Carlin Brothers is typically write research papers every single week.
Yeah.
Like that is the product that we are presenting to you. Like we have a hypothesis, we're providing supporting materials and then like ending with a conclusion.
Yeah. Citing passages from the book.
Exactly. Yeah. And so like, this is like one of those things where it's like, I think that what you need to appreciate is the critical thinking involved.
Exactly.
And like did the student understand what Shakespeare was trying to say? Did they then think about what they were trying to say and then provide meaningful insight on their interpretation through the eyes of a 14-year-old on, you know, what is otherwise one of the most studied stories of all time in history? It's like, are you expecting something profound from me?
I know.
And by the way,
it's all just packaging around, can you write a sentence with a comma in the right spot?
Yes. And I'm sure on the flip side, so to look at it from their perspective, the other question as well is the following, which is like, my ninth, 10th, and 11th grade English teachers had 10 years of 25 plus. Like they had been teaching in the system for that long,
right?
Like very long stretches at the same school, had seen, you know, thousands of students and taught this curriculum. And so the question in my mind is like, you know, if they were to walk in and like hear this, like our side of the argument, they might be like, guys, I was grading lots of papers. The other kids weren't having these issues.
Oh, sure.
And like, you know, like that is an entirely possible counter argument to this particular thing. Like maybe there was just like slippages in the system and it was sort of like, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe I was just not that good at grammar, you know, or something like that.
But it's like, because you're not good at grammar shouldn't mean that it is not representative of your like understanding of the material,
right?
You know?
Right.
Stuff like that's so annoying. And you know what? Now I've got a program called Grammarly that is amazing. Not sponsored, but let me tell you, you should just get it, or you should have some sort of word spelling. Everything has spell check built in. That's the other thing, is that we had spell check. So I always felt like, yeah, spell check. Like, I'm not going to have any grammatical errors because they're spell check. So everything will be spelled correctly.
Right.
We're good. That'll catch everything. Well, let me tell you what will catch everything is Grammarly, and it will. Yeah, I love that software.
It is really cool.
So good.
I feel like it smoothed out our scripts. Like so you have it on your computer and I don't on mine, but we're working on the same like document, and so a lot of times I'm like, these are starting to look better.
Yeah.
Like just like from like a physical standpoint, because I would say we are a little shoot from the hip. Like our scripts themselves are not necessarily like a work of art.
No.
Like they're pretty like they are like rough in nature, because we will ultimately say the words out loud, and we typically
write with a lot of voice.
We do. Yeah. So we write in a way that we know will make sense when we say it aloud, but we have worked with people in the past where I've seen their scripts, and like when you see their scripts, they're like neat and aligned and oriented and like markered, and you know, and I'm like
parts will be like, this part's sectioned off in an orange block because over here, and then it'll be like off to the side, like I'm going to run this specific B-roll right here, so make sure you mention this part will be VO narrated. And it's just like, we're writing it today and shooting it tomorrow, so I can hold all the information in my head between now and then, and that's as long as I need this to work.
I don't need all the we don't need performance cues, because it's like we can just literally remember long enough from the time we write it to the time we shoot it, because nothing else happens between those two moments,
right?
It's just pretty funny.
On all this, that like I remember of my four English teachers in high school, two of them I would have said were bigger like grammar people, and two of them were more like, yeah, if you've got like the right idea and you understand the material, that's more important. And so like, I remember my senior English teacher, like she would get back and she'd be like, you have such a wonderful voice in here. Like you're clearly going far with writing. Is it like all that stuff? And it's just like, if you were to look at all my papers from the year before my junior year, it would have been like, you'd have thought I was the worst writer in the world. Oh, you know?
I think their classrooms, I know exactly the two teachers are talking about. I think they were next to each other, and it would not surprise me if while they were like waiting for students to file into their classroom in between classes, if they weren't like standing arms crossed, looking at each other and like kind of like, you know, grinding their teeth at one another. They could not have been on more opposite ends of the spectrum. However, I think that your senior, I know exactly who your senior English teacher was. Like, you should write her a letter.
I really should.
Because I know, like, I feel like there was, even from just being at home with you during your senior year English, like, I feel like there was a part of you, the only glimmer of the, what would it go on to be your like John Kerlin / YouTube / like eventual career persona?
Yeah.
Was the first time I ever truly saw it was in your senior English class.
Oh, interesting. Like, I do think that was a really important class for me in that regards. It's also the class that I had with Beth when that was like the only class we had together, like when we started like dating.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That was also kind of cool. I would say the very first time I ever like, maybe that like surfaced for me out loud was actually in 10th grade English. And I remember I had to give, like, it was like a summer reading thing, and I got into class, and the teacher, Mr. Sauls, told us like,
Sauls
was a great, great teacher.
He's so good.
So good.
He had the driest humor of anybody you've ever met.
And was also in like a band. He was in like a band. I don't think he played banjo.
He
played banjo in the band. I remember, I think our class, his humor was so dry that he brought that up several times before people in the class realized that he was telling the truth about playing the banjo in a band.
Yeah.
And then as soon as everyone realized it, it was like, that's the most perfect thing ever. But we came back, and for summer reading, he'd like told us like the ways in which you could do your turn in your report for summer reading. And one of it was just like, give a book review in front of the class. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I had to give a book review for Gulliver's Travels in front of the class. And I remember not really having a whole lot to say about it other than like, I really didn't like it.
Okay.
I thought it was I didn't like it because I had to read it in the summer and I wanted to go outside and play soccer. And mom kept being like, you got to read like 10 more pages. And it was like, I feel like I need to give it another chance because it's like they made those Jack Black movies about it, and it was like so lighthearted and like, you know, funny. And I was like, what? This is not how I remember Gulliver's Travels. I remember being the worst.
I know. This is the thing too. Yeah. It's like whenever you're reading books that are assigned to you, like this is the other part of the problem too, is that like, I feel like they're trying to use, maybe I haven't read Gulliver's Travels, so I don't know the with this particular example, but it feels like they try to use so like deep literature stories versus just like stories that could be topical or otherwise like designated as entertaining.
Yeah.
But like sometimes I'm like, are you trying to discourage people from reading books?
No.
Because like you're like, not making it very fun.
It's just like, yeah. Anyway, in Gulliver's Travels, Gulliver goes to one land where he is a tiny person amongst giants, and then the next land he goes to, he is a giant amongst tiny people, and then he goes and lives with horses, where horses are the more intelligent breed, and he learns how to speak horse, whatever. Anyway, those are the three things that happens. And I remember getting up and being like, I felt like I was expected to have like positive things to say about it, or like say just sort of what happened. And I was like, I didn't like it. And I was just, I remember just like feeling like, well, take a risk. It would be like, I thought this book was dumb and I didn't like it. And like, I remember just going through all the things in it, and like the entire class was just like laughing the whole time. Like everything I was saying was like either they had the same experience and was like, thank you for saying it or something. But like, that was not me. I was not someone who got up in front of the class and just like made everyone laugh. And I remember sitting down like, that was awesome. I was like, man, I was like, whew, That was really cool.
That's like the best day of my life.
I didn't even think I was going to go like that. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that's amazing. That's amazing.
So that was Gulliver's Travels in 10th grade.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I expect a revamped book review from
a scathing review.
It's about to go down.
It's going down, Gulliver.
It would be very interesting to reread them as you are now older. So mine that I always talk about is The Giver, which I read in 7th grade. Mm-hmm. And I think the two books I remember reading was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and The Giver, mm-hmm. both in 7th grade. And I feel like to this day, I can completely understand if people are like, oh, they're a bit of Jekyll and Hyde, you know, meaning like they can be like super like upbeat and, you know, like whatever, or they can be like super like dark and intense.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it's like you understand the reference, and that's about the only thing from that story that I remember at all. And then The Giver, I remember reading and just sort of being like, huh, this is kind of like a unique like world and stuff like that. But for the most part, none of it meant anything to me. And I actually didn't even like my 7th grade English teacher. But like, for whatever reason, that book is like, I feel like it is like, waves have crashed over me as the older I've gotten, where I'm like, wow, that was a very interesting read. Like, it had a lot to say. So, and I know I've brought this up before, but
yeah.
Anyway, it's very interesting because I think I didn't understand it at the time, but I retained enough of the information so that as time went on, I slowly retroactively actually understood what I was reading and like what the book was trying to say. And I found that to be incredibly interesting.
Yeah. I bet if I reread some of the books from I had to read in high school, they would go completely over my head even today.
I could completely see that. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm trying to think of what else we had to read. Honestly, the other one that we had to read in 10th grade with Sauls was The Lord of the Flies, which is one
great
that I'm like,
one.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
I remember
a lot
about that one.
Yeah, that one definitely stands out because it's pretty shocking.
Yeah.
For like a book that you read in school, it's like, okay. The Most Dangerous Game, I read in 9th grade, which is, I think, is a short
this
story.
It's a short story. Rainsford there. Yeah. I remember that one. That was good.
Yeah.
These were engaging stories. They had lots of, like, you know, I feel like they were like short and engaging and like things happened and they were character. Well, not, I don't know. The Most Dangerous Game. Maybe it's just because it's so short.
Maybe that's all it is. Yeah. Like, easy enough to follow. But you read a lot of short stories and like not all of them stand out and like stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah. That was a good one.
All that to say, though, that at some point in time, our kids are going to experience these things. Or even, like, you know, talking about, like, mom being like, hey, you need to go read 10 more pages of your book before you go out and play soccer. This is going to be something that, like, as summer reading is happening for Luke, however many years in the future, which for some reason I suspect Luke is not going to have this issue. And I feel like he's going to like get home and be like, I'm reading all my books right away, so I don't have to worry about it for the rest of the summer.
Yeah. One can dream, Ben.
Yeah. Right. But like, otherwise I feel like mom must have needed to like go into your room and like figure where you folded a page and like looked at it and been like, okay, so he's got like 200 pages left and we're like 4 days away from school. So he needs to be reading pretty much, you know, like 15 pages every.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know. Gotta move on. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
I remember, let's see, there was one we read. There was a book called The Invisible Man that I remember reading in senior year where I remember I had this problem where it wasn't even like an uninteresting book. Well, maybe it was. But I remember I had this problem every single night where I'd go home and read it and I would get like 5 minutes into reading it and I would fall asleep.
Yeah.
Like not because the book was like, and I was even trying to like talk to my teacher about this. I was like, it's not that I'm not reading it. It's that every time I try to read it, I fall asleep. Like, I don't know what to do. Like I'm dead serious. It's not because it's boring. I just literally keep falling asleep. And then I wake up in the morning and I have to come to school and I can't have read it because I fell asleep. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to, like, this is my real problem right now.
Right. Yeah. No, which is a rather, it's funny because it's such a candid thing. Like, it's so easy to see like a high school student being like, okay.
Yeah.
Like go in, you know, it's like go and start reading earlier in the night or something, but it's like
it doesn't matter when I read it.
I'm going to fall asleep. Yeah. That's an interesting one. Also, it occurs to me that we used to perform a maneuver in cross country called The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah.
Was it inspired by this book?
Well, I mean, the name was inspired by the book, not the maneuver itself.
Interesting.
The maneuver itself was just, you know, a well thought out and amazingly clever way to avoid running.
Well, here, before we explain The Invisible Man, how about a quick transition?
Ooh.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, Ben, the Invisible Man.
The Invisible Man. So this was, honestly, this is like one of those things where like I think back about like our time running cross country, and half the time I'm curious as to whether or not we actually liked running or if we just liked being on the team. And a lot of times I come to the conclusion that maybe I just liked being on the team, and that running was more just like the thing that I subjected myself to so that I could be on the team.
Right, yeah. I was like, you know what was great? Being on the cross country team. You know what the real problem with that was? Running.
All the time.
All the time. Like, what is the deal? deal.
So it was
no.
It was almost like if there was a way to not be running but still be on the cross country team, that's really best case scenario.
Yeah. Well, the Invisible Man, it's, you know what, as I think about it, I'm like, in order to even pull it off, you already had to be pretty good at running.
It's very true. Yeah. Like the entire idea was that we had like a variety of routes that we could run from our high school where they were just like predetermined, like loops or out and backs, where it would just be like, okay, like if you run like 20 minutes in this direction, then you can turn around and run 20 minutes in the opposite direction, get back to the school, and you did a 40-minute run.
Right.
And like that was like the way that we like did a lot of stuff. So probably the easiest and therefore most common route for us to do, we called Parkway South.
Yeah.
And Parkway South was literally like you would like leave the school, you would like go through the neighborhood that like leads you to the school, and you would be able to like run up this like little corner thing onto the Blue Ridge Parkway, which runs through Virginia, and basically run. It was maybe a good run for us because it was like kind of uphill for several miles, like the moment you got onto the parkway. So usually that meant for like your 20 minutes out, you were running uphill, and then for the 20 minutes back, you could then like coast downhill back to the school. So I think that's probably why our coach had us do it so frequently. Plus just exposure to hills was generally a good thing with where we live in the world.
Yeah.
But our brilliant scheme for the Invisible Man was basically if we started the run and it would be like the GMA and we would like run out front of the entire group really hard. So like, you know, you would run like a mile and a half till you got to the parkway, where you would then go up onto the parkway, run over into the woods, and you'd be so far ahead that you could go jump into the woods, hide behind like a tree that had fallen over.
Yeah.
Wait for the entire team to like come up, turn and go. And they all, the idea at the very least was that they assumed that you were just so far ahead
that they couldn't see you anymore.
Couldn't see you, nor would they catch you.
Right.
And then from there, the entire thing was basically like waiting for everybody to then come back and you would then file back.
Yeah. And then you would file in behind them. And that was the kicker. So like, even if they were like, God, they must be like, they must have gone the wrong way, or they must have, that even if you thought like, oh, they must be like in the woods or something, like the kicker was you'd come up behind them as if not only did you run further and harder out back, but because now they've turned around and you come up behind them, it's like, oh yeah, now we've caught you on the way back too, because we're going that fast today.
Yeah, we're just killing it.
We're just killing it, man. And the thing was, it was easy to catch them on the way back because you hadn't run.
Because you hadn't run.
And they'd run the whole time. And you were like nice and fresh, so you could catch them no problem.
Yeah. But I feel like our coach mostly saw through it.
Yeah, probably.
I think he pretty much, and we say it as if this was like something we did like with extreme regularity. Like it really wasn't, but it was still like sort of like we gave it a name, and I feel like the name was so perfect because they were chasing the Invisible Man.
They were chasing the Invisible Man. Like, where'd they go? We got to catch up to him. And of course he couldn't because we weren't there.
So you're never going to catch us, but we can always come up behind you.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was actually hilarious to me, the number of different ways in which our coach would find us, not doing what we were supposed to be doing. There was also, we have a road near where we could go. The other loop we could do was called Crystal Creek.
Oh, yes.
And it's actually a very winding road that sort of like carves, it connects like two different parts of
that's a bumpy road, as my kids would call it.
A bumpy road. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so randomly on the side of Crystal Creek Road is what is a just really small, thick batch of bamboo.
Sure is.
Like, I mean, maybe like, I don't even know, 20 yards square.
Like worth it. Just some bamboo growing on the side of the road.
Just some, which I have to imagine someone at some point in time planted as a way to like give extra privacy to their home.
That has to be the case. Something like that. And it's like, I mean, if you can imagine this road, it's sort of weird. Like I say, it's like if you were driving on it, it would look like the bamboo is, you know, right next to you. But then if you were to like go, if you wanted to walk amongst the bamboo, you would immediately realize that there is like a 10-foot drop off immediately from the side of the road to the ground where the bamboo is growing from.
Right.
And it's like grown like 50 feet into the air or something. So it's like, you know, it's thick, it's there,
yeah,
but it's like, you know, the there's a sharp drop off between the road and the ground. So all that to say, you could be standing right next to the road in the midst of the bamboo and not be seen by people running on the road.
None whatsoever. Yeah. And I feel like the real allure of it, because like when it really came down to it, you couldn't actually like successfully not do practice because it was so far into the run that like, you know, it's like if it's halfway through the run, then even if you were to backtrack, you still had to go the same amount of distance. And even if you go to finish, you still have to go the same amount of distance.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like, it was not like a good example of like, of doing less work, but I think it was just so like bamboo in Roanoke is just not a thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not where you expect it to be. It's not elsewhere. Like this was clearly someone who planted it at some point in time because they thought it was either interesting or useful. And it's just there now. And it was always kind of just like cool to be like in it. It was like, oh, ooh, this is like different scenery here of all places. But yeah, sometimes I felt like our coach would know that we would be down there and then he would like kind of like come up behind us like in the bamboo and be like, get on the road.
No, pff, I don't remember that happening.
Man, you jump clean out of your skin. That guy, when he was mad, oh man,
you're gonna have to do like 20 push-ups.
I know. I felt like he always like I think he had to endure this era of just like mischievousness.
No, this has to be a constant.
Is it?
Like
I would. I felt like what he had to do was almost like wait for some upperclassmen to not teach the lowerclassmen the new trick.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible. Yeah. No, I remember like I'm sure if you I want to say it's in Name of the Wind where it's like folks like you don't like how often do you really look up or something like at the roofs. Like how he's like able to walk along the rooftops without people noticing him.
Oh yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're like, you'd be amazed how often,
how often people don't look up. I felt like stuff like that became like really like intuitive and obvious when you were like down in like the bamboo. It's just like you felt like, oh my god, like you know you're down there, so it feels really obvious. But it was like, how often would you even? You wouldn't like the people running up there don't assume anyone's hiding in the bamboo, so you didn't even have to like hide. You can just stand there and look up, and it's like no one's gonna see you because
why would they look down?
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
I remember like stuff like that, like standing out and feeling like this is like a like a discovery is almost of like how people like act when they don't know, you know, I don't know.
It's a weird. You're right. Like I mean, you're practicing the reality of the ability to hide in plain sight.
Yes. Yeah. Stuff like that. I mean, honestly, it feels like the same. It's like it's like the GMA stickers where it's like, you know where they came from and no one else does. And that's sort of fun. It's right. Like, just like, I know I'm down here and I'm not supposed to be. And it like feels really obvious, but like really no one thinks you're going to like, you're on the cross country team. What incentive do you have to skip doing the practice? Like the isn't this reason why you're here? You know,
no one
thinks you're trying to, you know, slack at practice. No one thinks you're going to be hiding in the bamboo. So no one even looks. Yeah.
And yet,
there we were
hiding in the bamboo,
10 feet away.
Amazing,
yeah,
truly glorious. Thing. Yeah, truly glorious. What a very interesting, like, and strange kind of like way to have been learning life skills.
I know.
Like, actually, we were talking about this last night because we had like a big family dinner with like our younger brother as well, and all the wives and kids and stuff. And one of the things that we were talking about was like when I went to high school, I think you missed it, but I didn't. We were given laptops starting.
Oh, yeah, like, no. My grade, this was what, if you were to have listened carefully, no one would have, but so like the graduation speech given by the students in my graduating class of 2006, it was just like we were, you know, like everything seemed to just barely miss our class. All of these benefits that other generations seemed to get, like we kept just sort of like whiffing a little bit. Like when I started, like our school used to be broken into a junior high school situation versus middle school high school. The difference is junior high goes up to ninth grade and then high school starts at 10th grade.
Yes.
So in case you're ever wondering what the difference was, at least that was the difference here. So when we were all in eighth grade at junior high was the last year it was a junior high.
Right.
The very next year it became middle school and the high school began accepting ninth graders. So we were the first freshman class at the high school, which, you know, is, I guess, cool, but it meant that we were never the top of the school.
Right.
And you know, we went like, from six, seven, eight. It's like, oh, we're going to be the oldest classmen here. Wrong. You're going to get almost there and then go right back to the bottom.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So we missed out on being the top grade for that year.
The laptops, you guys.
The laptops. We were the last class not to get laptops. So the grade immediately below us was the first class to get laptops.
Right.
That was a bummer. We were like the last year to not benefit from some sort of driver's license / learner's permit. I don't remember the regulations, but of course, because I'm not 15 anymore. But at the time, it was like we had to wait until we were like, you know, 16 and a half to get our learner's permit or something.
Oh, sure.
Whereas like
yes,
if you were
right.
born 1 year after us, you only had to wait till you were 15 and a half. So it was like almost, and then that like passed at the same time or something. So it was like you became 16 and like finally I can get it, whereas someone a year below you like could get it immediately as well, because now the law was new and it was like, well, that was a bummer. So we just had a bunch of dumb situations like that hit our year. We were like that transition year for everything.
For everything. Yeah. I know. It was like, oh man, it can't be that class again. 06. Yeah.
06.
It's always 06.
I know. It's always 06.
Yeah. Anyway, that
sorry
was us.
That's
okay.
But you guys made it anyway.
We made it. Look at us. We're so scrappy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that was exactly what I was going to say though. Yeah. It's like, you know, they gave us laptops and I think part of the thing about being so early in the laptop curriculum is that like, you know, like I said, like most of my teachers, you know, had been there, you know, for 25 plus years, like a really long time. And so like they had done things without them for so long that for the most part, they didn't really approve of us having them anyway. So like a lot of the teachers straight up were like, no laptops in class whatsoever. And it's like, these are school issued laptops for us to take notes on.
Like, right. Like, what do you mean?
This is like the whole point of having them. But like, it was so, and I could imagine like, you know, if you've done everything for the past 25 years this way, and all of a sudden it's sort of like, hey, now the kids have these new devices that, by the way, they can also play games on.
Yeah.
You know, so that was sort of like an interesting thing. Like they gave us these things. And the other was like, you know, we'll put all the textbooks on the laptops and then we don't have to like have them like looking around all these heavy books anymore.
Yeah.
But like even that had not successfully like come to pass yet. So like we had these laptops. The teachers didn't know how to ask us to be using the laptops. The books that we were supposed to be not needing to have with them, we still just needed anyway.
Right.
The laptops themselves weighed, I think, like 8 or 9 pounds. So like then your backpack just weighs like 35 pounds.
Right.
Because you're carrying like all the rest of your books all the time.
Yeah,
too.
With the laptop. And it's like no one who's been given a free laptop at that age, especially when like this was like before phones or anything, were like probably if you had access to a computer, you were splitting time on it with every other member of your family.
Yes, yep, yeah. Absolutely.
Like you were given like such a piece of technology to yourself. Like even if you didn't need it for class, like there's no way anyone in your grade didn't have that laptop in their backpack at all times.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, 100%. And so like, and the other thing too, was that like, it was new enough that they like, hadn't been able to like figure out what things to restrict, which was like most of the like online, like mini games, like plug-in games, stuff like that. So, you know, for like a huge period of time, it was sort of like you would get to school and like, you know, you'd like look around and like everybody would have this, like, I think it was called BMX backflips or something like that. But it was a game using like basically like two cursor keys. And it would just like you would either be like pressing forward and your little bike guy would like drive forward, or you could press backwards and he would do like a little bit of a wheelie. And so like everybody was always playing this like game.
Yeah.
It became like just, you know, like the who's who was like who was really good at the
exactly. It's just like, oh yeah, what, like you think you can stop us from playing games, but we'll always find one more way, and whatever game we're able to then play in that way will always be better than school. So we will make it a thing and it will culturally rise, and then you'll block that one and we'll find another way.
Yes. And so this is exactly what I was gonna say. It's like they didn't know how to teach us with the laptops. There wasn't anything about the laptops that we were specifically doing that like enabled us new learning potential, at least at that time. And what it really allowed us to do was get really, really, really good at bypassing what was other pretty rudimentary you know, defenses.
Yeah.
So like all of a sudden, you know, like we're finding like effectively the same thing as like VPNs today, but yeah. like, but like, you know, proxies and like right. subnet codes and stuff like that. So like, you know, we learned a lot about computers because we weren't using them the way right. that people wanted us to be using them.
Right. Like it ended up being educational, but like in a very roundabout way.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I wonder about stuff like that sometimes. It's like, what if that's really the point? You know,
sure.
You're like, oh, look at like they think they're outsmarting us, but they're learning and they don't even see it.
Right.
You know, like, was that really the experiment going on here? Where it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, we're like breaking the rules at like cross country practice. Like, yeah, but look at all the other things we learned in doing that. And it's like, you might have not, maybe I didn't run for an hour that day, but you know what I did? I made lifelong memories with my friends not doing it. You know,
right, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
And in many ways, that's more valuable.
And not to mention, it's like you're doing sports on a volunteer basis anyway. I made the choice to be here, so yeah. It's like, you know, on some level that's the other piece of it as well.
Right.
Like yeah. But yeah, so no, it's you're right. Like, I mean, now it's how many years later we're still talking about things that we did at that stage fondly.
Yes. You know?
So strong, great memories.
Yes.
No, it is really funny the way in which the bypassing of the rules can ultimately actually be the true
right.
educational.
It's very
experience.
Ender's Game.
It is very Ender's
yeah,
Game.
It's
yeah,
like, you
yeah.
know, oh, you have all these little soldiers following the rules, and it's like Ender's like, they wouldn't have made these rules so easy to break if they didn't intend us to break them.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, clearly this is on purpose.
And they're sitting back there like, Ender's figured it out. He's so smart. Bravo, Ender, bravo.
Promote him to general, yeah, please.
Make that 10-year-old a general.
Oh man. Completely strange concept is the intelligence of the kids in that book. By the way, something I would have read in high school and found to be actually engaging and interesting.
Oh man, yeah. Ender's Game, great. Good read. Probably take you like an hour. It's like this big.
I listen to it, I think, probably like once a year. Yeah. And then like, I think for like a little while, it like changes the way I think about everything. I'm always like, I'm Ender.
Yeah. We all wish we were Ender. Right?
Just a little bit. No, but no. Slash, have you seen my ACT scores? Full circle.
Full circle. Yeah, right. Guess who's not?
Yeah. Ender would have not only like completely passed it, but he could have passed it on his own and probably could have hacked the system to change a score to a perfect score if you wanted to.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
And
no
could have just done both, and then probably also like helped someone else achieve a perfect score in the process. And
yeah,
like
except Peter,
awesome
he would like marked his down or something. If
Peter.
Yeah, he would change his name to like Butt Wiggler.
all the terrible
names they come up with.
Man, I love how this became like a very small Ender's Game book club right here at the end of this.
Yeah, you guys love Ender's Game, right?
Yeah, everybody's understanding all these little references.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, I think that should do it for this week's episode of The Pop. I feel like of all the things, I actually came into today with a lot of stuff on the show notes to talk about, and we didn't touch on any of them,
no.
So it means great shape for next week. Never could have expected that like our foray into Luke going into kindergarten could have like taken us on such a trip down memory lane. However, in other exciting and fun news, there's some pretty cool stuff that is going on in the world of popcorn culture announcements.
Yeah.
Which is that once again, we've been invited back to GoFest. That is going to be the weekend of October 14th here in Roanoke, Virginia, where we are going to be doing another live episode of The Pop. It is a completely free event to attend. GoFest itself is an incredibly cool festival where there's just lots of neat things to see and food vendors and like outdoor stuff and people doing tricks on bikes and lumberjacks running up and down these big cool like logs and such. We will also have a booth set up with like, you know, general popcorn culture, Super Carlin Brothers merch. We'll have the coffee from Carlin Brothers Coffee available there. So just a really cool all around SCB weekend. And in addition to those events that we have going on that same weekend, the night before, as a way to make like a whole weekend fun of festivities, we're also renting out a full theater space at the Grandin Theater.
The Grandin Theater in
Roanoke, Virginia. It's like a very historic landmark of the area. The theater itself has got like interior castle walls.
It's awesome.
And it's just absolutely beautiful. And we are going to be hosting a live Super Carlin Brothers trivia event at the theater where you can come in to a movie theater. We will have like our huge trivia Kahoot screen, like up on the movie theater screen. Jay and I will be there hosting it like in real life. We will have amazing prizes for all of the winners. It should just be like a super fun, super Carlin Brothers event. That will be a ticketed event. It'll be $20 per ticket. Just flat rate across the board.
Boom.
We will have a link in the description down below or the show notes for today's episode for that. So we would absolutely love to have you come out and do a full weekend of Super Carlin Brothers shenanigans with us. It should really just be an all around great time. So
yes,
I am super looking forward to that. So again, that's going to be the Friday, October 13th for trivia. The live free episode of the pop at GoFest is going to be taking place on October 14th. Just sort of like middle of the day. Most likely we don't have a specific time.
Don't have a time yet.
Anyway, if you are looking just for like, if you've been asking for meetups or you're looking for like a place to come and like meet Jay and I in real life, this would be an amazing opportunity to do that. And it should just be like an all around fun weekend. So again, links to all that stuff in the show notes down below. But otherwise, until next time,
pop, pop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.